From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. It's Wednesday, March 12, 2025. It's Spring Membership Drive Week. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Kenneth Chi, Shawa Toksik Nusum, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. Also today, we begin new adventures as we are now also live streaming the show. Visit ktoo.org/JPMLive to be taken to our YouTube page and watch us here in the studio as we chat with our guests. Today, Juno Lyric Opera is presenting the classic operetta, Der Fledermaus. We have a preview of this fully staged production playing this weekend only with the director and guest artist. KTOO has some new voices on the air and in the newsroom. We meet new Morning Edition host Mike Lane, and we have a chat with Jamie Deep and Alex Solomon, two new reporters covering education and climate. And Brenda Wright from Juno Audubon is here to share with us about a special presentation of the animated feature Migration, playing at no cost this week at the Gold Town Nick. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edie have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Ock Bay, and online at ktoo.org. And now streaming via YouTube. You can hit that link by going to ktoo.org/JPMLive. This is Juno Afternoon, and I have some special guests in here. But first, Gabriel von Eiselstein is lured to a masquerade ball where wackiness ensues. It's mistaken identity, clever disguises, and plenty of deception and mischief in the operetta Der Fledermaus being presented this weekend only by the Juno Lyric Opera. And you can go to junoopera.org for more information. And joining me now in the studio, it is directed by Kathleen Wayne and conducted by William Todd Hunt. And starring as Gabriel is guest artist tenor David Cangelosi. Cangelosi. I even practiced it before we went on air. Cangelosi.
You got it now.
Kathleen and David join me in the studio now. Going to cheese Kathleen. Hi.
Hi, Boston. How are things going?
Good. It's good. And Gunath Cheesh, David Wasiati, how are you doing?
Good. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Well, Gunath Cheesh, Shatye Adi, thank you so much for both of you joining us in the studio today. So let's start with you, Kathleen. You are the director of this production.
Directing, right. A fully staged operetta.
I love that. So tell us about the show for people who may not know Der Fledermaus.
Well, David does a good job of the description.
Okay.
Because he's only done it many times.
It's in the repertoire.
Yeah.
It's a farcical tale of two gentlemen. One gentleman, Gabriel von Eisenstein, left his buddy on a dock one night on a bench after they attended a costume party. He was dressed as a bat, his friend. He leaves him on the dock as a practical joke because they both had too much to drink.
Mm.
And by the next morning, he was being made fun of by children and tourists alike as they kind of walk around. And ever since that day, he's been trying to get back at his friend. That's me, Gabriel Eisenstein. So he he arranges an enormous hoax that involves absolutely everybody, which eventually includes the chief of police, all the townspeople, his wife, and even a Russian oligarch who is just so bored that the oligarch decides that he's looking for some entertainment of some sort. So he joins in the farce, lending his money, and in this particular case, his super yacht, in order for the whole farce to take place. Eventually, Gabriel Eisenstein winds up in jail, where he was supposed to be in the first place because of an assault that he perpetrated on a police officer back in Act One. But it was all a farce, and it all comes out happy in the end, but he kind of gets his comeuppance. So it's a big sort of revenge story, and it's the reason it's called Deflator Mouse, or The Flying Mouse, which translated as The Bat, is that the gentleman who was left in his bat costume and made fun of way back at the beginning, before the opera ever took place, is the guy who gets revenge on his buddy at the end.
I love it. That's a great description. Yeah, The Bat.
But did I hit it all? I think I hit it all.
You did a great job.
So, Kathleen, how did Juno Lyric Opera decide to do Deflator Mouse?
Well, this I can handle. 50 years ago, Juno Lyric Opera started. It started by three ladies who were taking voice lessons from Leon Lischner through the university. And they decided they wanted to do a show that could give all three ladies a principal role. And Deflator Mouse has that. It has two leading lady parts and then a pants part, which is a female singing like a tenor part.
Yeah.
So it met all that criteria, and they did it in 1987 or 79. We did it again in 1997, and then now in 2025. So it was 50 years ago, approximately, that this organization started. So why not celebrate the anniversary, 50th anniversary, with the same production.
Right where we began.
Right where we began.
It's so many organizations in Juno started around 50 years
they
ago.
They did. It's weird.
There's a lot of 50th anniversaries going on up here. I noticed on all the placards and different arts organizations.
Yeah, we just celebrated ours last year.
Oh, really?
And there's a bunch more coming this year. Yeah. The Folk Festival is 50 this year.
Oh, my gosh. Well, something really happened. not just oil money, but a lot of creative people decided to do some wonderful things.
So, Kathleen, where did you get your start in opera? You've been directing opera for a while. How did it begin for you?
I'm actually a registered dietitian, a diva by night, a registered dietitian by day. And I hadn't really, I have a minor in music and a major in dietetics, but I always loved music, always wanted to be in it. My parents said, don't go, don't study, don't become a music performer. You'll never, you know, have a full-time job. David has done that magnificently, almost celebrating your 50th.
I'm almost 50 years in show business. It's the only job I've ever had.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's the only job I've ever had. And my parents also told me not to do it. And I did exactly the opposite of what they told me to do. And I was bound and determined to prove them wrong. That I could make a living at it, and indeed have. So.
Absolutely, yeah. And
well, on the opposite side, I wanted to do it, did get a full-time job, but I got to be in operas and be an opera diva. And because of Juno Lyric Opera, it was just the perfect time for me to join the opera. The friends that I've made through the opera 25 years ago are still my friends. We still celebrate Christmas and Thanksgiving together. My kids have grown up in the theater. I call them my theater rats because they would go to rehearsals and they know every corner in any of the facilities that we perform in. So
she's selling herself a little bit short on the
I think so, David.
Side. So let me fill in a big gap here. It was actually Kathleen's idea. And she and I were in production meetings on this some months ago, When she sat down with the score and the script, she had a brilliant idea of updating it. Mm-hmm. This operetta, you know, it's a fun musical theater piece. It's nothing but fun. It's fun and frolic, and everyone will have a good time. No serious themes, no social X-rays. It's just a fun night at the theater if you just want
to. We need
go
that
out.
Right now.
Oh, we need that, yeah.
And it's been around for 151 years. It has been done. Performed every single year for 151 years, somewhere in the world, multiple performances and productions each year, in fact. Kathleen decided it would be a great idea to update it. So we've updated everything, the storyline and all of the locations to befit Juneau, Alaska specifically.
Oh, excellent.
So instead of being in people's mansions, we are on people's yachts. Instead of Prince Orlovsky having a super mansion, he has a super yacht where we celebrate the big party on. We have number of local references to the locale. And so this was all Kathleen's idea, and it was a brilliant idea. And we like to stress that people who come out and see us, you're going to see your friends and neighbors on stage.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, is like
I'm a guest artist. I was brought in special, and this is not my first time here, and I'm thrilled to be back doing this. But absolutely everybody else is local talent, and they are very, and I stress the word very, very good.
Yeah, there's a big list. I think on the website you can see who's in the show. There's it's a big cast.
It's a big opera. Yeah, like when big, you say fully staged opera, it really means a lot of people and a lot of work putting together the show, getting costumes, making a set, having the lighting, having, sound. It just is a lot of people involved.
We are going to be immersed.
You're going to be immersed.
I love that.
And a very good orchestra. Yes. So it's a full night of the theater. It's something you don't see absolutely every day here. And in that this is the 50th anniversary, if anyone was ever thinking about dipping their toe into the world of quote-unquote opera, this would be the one to come in and have fun with. It's all sung in English. The dialogue is all in English. It's been translated in many different languages, usually performed in German, hence the German title, Die Fledermaus, the Flying Mouse, or The Bat. But everything is done in English. And so no one will get lost. The story is very fun to follow along with.
And Kathleen, will you give us the rundown of when, where, and how we get tickets and information?
Well, it's going to be at the high school, JDHS. It starts Friday at 7 p.m. We also have a show on Saturday at 7 p.m. And the Sunday will be an afternoon performance at 3 p.m.
Okay, and we can get tickets at Juno Lyric Opera or JunoOpera.org. JunoOpera.org.
They are beautifully priced tickets so that everyone can attend, but there's a special thing that we're doing thanks to some generous grants that were received. The Sunday performance at 3 o'clock p.m., that'll be Sunday, 3 o'clock, that is a pay-as-you-can
performance.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Pay whatever you want to come in. This way it's 100% accessible to absolutely everyone in the community.
Yeah, that's really good. And I think, like you're saying, David, it's a great opera because it's fun. It's sung in English. You won't be bored. It's funny. You'll have a good time. It's a farce. All those good things.
There's the waltz.
Oh,
Johann
yes.
Strauss wrote the greatest waltzes. And everybody dances on stage. Yeah. I mean, you can't help but get swept up in the fun and the champagne, quote in air quotes, that we'll be drinking on stage. Mm-hmm. By the time you've left as an audience member and you've watched all the dancing and watched all this imbibing of the fake champagne, there's no champagne. We just fake it, sparkling water. You'll leave as if you're a little loopy yourself because you've had so much fun. I promise.
I love that. And David, you, as you mentioned, you're the guest artist coming into town to work with the Juno Lyric Opera, and you make your way all around. Like you said, you do this professionally. You're also the artistic and program director of the Van Vocal Institute.
That's an institute down in Montgomery, Alabama, where we help to train the next generation of young artists. And I've been fortunate over the years because I've literally performed all over the world, from the Metropolitan Opera, the San Francisco Opera, to Vienna, London, Tokyo, Hong Kong, you name it. I've probably been there, down in Buenos Aires. All the leading opera houses and concert halls of the world, including Carnegie Hall in New York. And that has afforded me the ability to make a lot of friends over the years. And I bring a lot of friends down to what I would call maybe underserved areas, such as down in the central southern states of America, where they don't get expert attention all the time. So I'm able to bring a lot of people down to that area in order to teach the next generation of kids who can't go to all of the fancy music programs in different places of the country. So the reason I'm back here in Juneau is because I have been performing in Alaska now for about 15 or 16 seasons. One thing leads to another, and I have made so many wonderful friends up here. The communities wherever I've performed have been so giving and so welcoming, and it becomes the best part of my year when I come up here.
Yeah, Juneau is a wonderful place. We're happy to have you here. And not only if you haven't ever seen David on stage, you may have seen him in some films. There are some televised performances, one of Pagliacci, right?
Yeah, Pagliacci. That's
Franco Zeffirelli's production starring Placido Domingo. You were in that.
Yeah, that was kind of an amazing time. Did a feature film of Tosca, the opera Tosca, which we premiered at the Venice Film Festival some years ago. There's been a number of different PBS varietals that I've been on and featured in. So it's been a very interesting almost 50 years, I have to admit.
That's fantastic. So if we wanted to follow you.
That's easy. All you got to do, if you want to look up davidcangelosi.com, that's my name. If you start looking it up, it'll start filling on your Google screen. They'll start learning more about me than they will ever have wanted to know. That would be davidcangelosi.com.
Yes, davidcangelosi.com. And for information and tickets for the Deflator Mouse, which is this weekend at the Juneau Douglas High School Yedda'a Cathle Auditorium, with various different performances on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with a pay-as-you-can, which is awesome to offer that to the community. You can find out more by going to juneauopera.org. What a pleasure. I wanted to ask you this, David,
yes,
before we leave. How many shows, because I know opera singers have this, how many shows are currently in your repertoire?
I think of the, between the musical theater and the opera variety, close to 100.
100?
Yeah, 100 different roles.
That's wild
that I've
me.
Done. And a lot of repeats there, too.
And then you just have them at the ready. I mean, in some ways,
they need freshening up. They need freshening up.
But quickly, you can get up to speed.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
The new ones are getting harder to learn because I'm getting older. It's not as easy to memorize these foreign languages. I have to sing in Czech, Czechoslovakian, Russian, Chinese, Spanish.
Right.
Certainly Italian, French, and German. And oddly enough, English can be one of the hardest to sing in. So,
wow.
But we're going to hit it this weekend, all in English, Friday, March 14th, Saturday, the 15th. Those performances are at 7 o'clock, and the pay-as-you-go on Sunday, the 16th, at 3 o'clock.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it, Kathleen. And David, go to juneauopera.org for more information. Gunth Cheese for being here.
Thanks for
having us.
Absolutely. Okay, up next, we meet the new reporters in the KTOO newsroom, Jamie Deep and Alex Solomon. But before we do, I was able to chat with new Morning Edition host Mike Lane earlier before he headed out for the day. Let's take a listen to that interview here on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. All right, if you've been listening to KTOO in recent months, you've probably heard a new voice in the morning. His name is Mike Lane, and he joins me in studio right now. What's up, Mike?
Not a lot. How about yourself, Boston?
I'm excellent. So you are the new KTOO Morning Edition host, and you have been since?
About 4 months now. Maybe a little more.
Okay.
I don't really remember. I'm getting to that age. You know.
And have you always been a Morning Edition fan?
Yes, I've been doing mornings. I probably 20 years, right around there, 20 years in the mornings. Prior to that, I was afternoons. And of course, when I started out, the grunt work in the middle of the night.
What do you find is the most challenging part about being a morning edition host?
Probably the hours themselves. It's not so much the getting up in the morning thing that I find challenging. It's the going to sleep thing. It's finding the time to adjust everything else around in life, dinners and such, and socialization, that sort of a thing.
So do you have to do the thing where you, cause you're on the air at what, 5 a.m?
I'm on, well, technically, yes. I'm here at 4 a.m. and the news starts at 6, but we're moving everything back into the 5 a.m. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And yeah. So to me, that means like you'd think you'd want to go to bed around what, 8 o'clock?
Yeah, you'd think. But no, no, I typically about 9:30, 10 o'clock.
And then Do you end up taking a nap after?
I do. I usually take about an hour nap or a half hour to an hour nap sometime throughout the day.
In the day?
Usually it's while I'm doing the news.
Depends on the news of the day, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I'm also curious to get our listeners a little bit more information about the reporters and the hosts that we have here at KTOO. So what are your interests outside of doing Morning Edition?
Oh, my dog, obviously. You've seen her around the studio, and she gets out and about with me quite a bit. Travel, of course, you know, but within the community, the trails is a big one for me.
And we would be remiss if we didn't tell the listeners the name of your dog.
Oh, Sweet Pea Billy Eyelash.
People love that name. I love it. Yeah. And then travel. What's your favorite travel destination?
Lately it's been Southern California is one, and then New York City is another.
Okay.
New York City. I hadn't been there for many, many years and just recently went and fell in love with it all over again. You know how it is. You've been there.
I have been there. I lived there for a number of years.
Yeah, and it's just it's a wonderful city. There's so much to do, so much to see, and you couldn't do it all in a lifetime. You just couldn't.
Can't do it, and then it's also great to get back to Juneau.
It is. Yeah. It is, absolutely. Coming home, there's nothing like the comfort of home, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I asked you the most challenging part about doing the news. What's your favorite part about doing Morning Edition?
You know, the news itself. And as you mentioned, we have some wonderful reporters here in-house as well as throughout the state, throughout our network. And the stories that we get are just phenomenal. They really bring home the local feeling because we're talking about dogs in the Iditarod that are adopted dogs or rescue dogs. We're talking about some of the darker stuff too, the fires or the trouble that happens throughout the state. But it's local and it's home. And in Southeast, of course, we've talked recently about a lot of the firings or job losses and how they affect other parts of our economy, whether it be the fishing, the forestry, et cetera. So, all of the stories, that's my favorite. I just love to see the new stuff every day.
Well, it's fantastic to have you on in the mornings. Mike Lane is the new Morning Edition host here at KTO. And before I let you go, Mike, let me ask you two other questions. Besides your dog, the lovely Billy Eyelash, what's your favorite hobby?
Oh, that's a good question. Right now, my least favorite hobby is moving because I'm in the process of doing that. tinkering with puzzles, that sort of a thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Puzzles?
Puzzles and word puzzles and physical jigsaw puzzles, that kind of a thing.
Okay.
I love that sort of stuff.
I love puzzles. And then do you have any recommendations for either a show you love to watch or a podcast that you listen to?
Well, I'm hooked on The White Lotus right now.
The White Lotus.
The latest season.
Is it good?
It is. It is. It's my favorite show that I've watched recently. I've just binge watched the Ted Lasso.
I love Ted Lasso.
That was just an amazing show.
Well, thank you, Mike, for taking a few minutes. I know you're going to go to sleep now. It's time for rest for you, but I really appreciate you coming in and talking to us a little bit.
Well, thank you, Boston.
We'll listen to Mike Lane in the mornings here on KTO Monday through Friday.
All right. Thank you, Boston. We'll talk to you soon.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO, where you can now catch us live on the YouTubes. Just go to kto.org/JPMLive, and we will like to see you over there. You can see us in the studio and see all the things that happen in the background. It's so nice. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. We heard Mike Lane there, KTO's new Morning Edition host in conversation from earlier. And joining me now in studio are two of the most recent hires here at KTOO in the newsroom. First, I have Jamie Deep, education reporter. Jamie.
Good afternoon.
Awesome. Good to see you. And Alex Solomon, climate and environment reporter.
Howdy.
Howdy. So Gunath Cheesh, for you both being here today and for coming to KTOO. So I have a few questions. We want to learn a little bit about the behind the scenes of the reporters. A lot of times we see the byline or we see the stories, but we don't get to know much about you. So I'm going to start with you, Jamie. Can you give us a little bit of your background and how you found your way to Juno?
Yeah, I guess the most logical places to start back in 2023. I had just graduated from the University of Oregon down in Eugene, and I was looking for work, and I ended up over at KBBI, which is the local NPR member station up in Homer. And so after I graduated and I got the job, 3 weeks later, I packed up my car and drove up to Alaska, and I was over there for about a year and a half, and then I got this job and drove and flew and shipped my car over here. I kind of got the Alaska bug. I moved here and I fell in love with it, and I loved the work that I did. And, you know, I saw this opportunity and I was just like, I have to get myself over here somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Southeast is a little bit different than Homer, right? A little bit.
Just, you know, the mountains are a little more in your face. But yeah. Yeah. A lot of similarities.
But it has that same small town feel.
Absolutely.
Homer's a fantastic town. It's a wonderful place. And so what brought you initially to Alaska? Was, I know it was the job, but did you think about moving here? Were you graduating and going wherever there was opportunity and then fell in love with Alaska?
It's a little bit of both. Through the programs that I've done in the past, a lot of folks will say, if you want to get your start in public radio, or if you just want to work in public radio, period, you have to go to Alaska at some point.
Why is that?
It's just the breadth of what you're able to accomplish, especially in a small station. There are very few other states that have a similar network to what Alaska has. And the type of reporting that you're covering is kind of at the forefront of like what everybody wants to cover, whether that's climate, whether that's education. Everything happens both at such a local level, and it can always be expanded to a statewide level. So you can always take these national issues and apply them in a really unique way that you can't in the rest of the country. And so you just learn a lot really quickly as well, because there's just so many small stations. I was a one-person newsroom in Homer, and then eventually became a two-person newsroom. And I covered a really large part of the Kenai Peninsula. You know, there were 8 to 10 communities within the region that I covered, from Homer to Seward to communities across the bay, Seldovia, Halibut Cove, Namwalik, Port Graham. And then you have Russian Old Believer villages as well as you go down east from Homer. There's just so much to cover and so much to do all the time. And as a small newsroom, you have to do everything. And so, you know, if you really want to get your reporting chops, Alaska is a great place to do it. And I believe that wholeheartedly now that I've been here for a little bit.
That's awesome. And I know we have you scheduled on the show, but it also happens to be spring membership drive week, which I'll be pitching this afternoon on the air. But you brought up an interesting thing, because I think it's part of what makes Alaska unique, like you said, about the network. Can you tell us what you mean by the network?
Yeah. So KTOO is a part of the Alaska Public Radio Network. So, you know, yes, we report on Juno and we report on the surrounding communities, but we're also a part of this network of stations across the entire state. So obviously Homer, You've got Kenai, you've got, you know, Alaska Public Media up in Anchorage, and then you also have folks at KYUK in Bethel, KMXT in Kodiak, and as far west as the Aleutians with KUCB. And everybody is working together to kind of cover their own little slice of Alaska, or, you know, covering these statewide stories. And these are all shared through the network with each other. So that way we're able to collaborate on stories. We're able to pull stories from around the state so that we're able to broadcast them locally as well. And there are a lot of really great initiatives that have come from that. Most recently, the Alaska Desk, which has placed four different reporters at stations across the state. Haines, Sandpoint and Dutch Harbor, Anchorage as well. And oh gosh, the last one is leaving me right
That's
now.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, they're all around the state. There's additional editing support for those smaller stations so that you don't feel as isolated and you can get that help and support you need. And overall, it just better serves the communities across the state as a whole to just have a network of people who are working together rather than working against each other to try to get some kind of story out first.
That's a great member pitch, which wasn't really my plan for this interview, but it was good. So you can, of course, go to kto.org/donate if you want to donate and become a member this week. It's a great way to support not only the staff here at KTO, but the entire network of Alaska and the reporting that gets done here, which is pretty fantastic for such a large place like we have here in the state of Alaska. Okay, so we'll come back to you in just a minute. I want to switch over to Alex. So Alex, will you tell us a little bit about your background and how you found your way to Juneau? You're the newest hire, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. I started last Tuesday. So, or no, two Tuesdays ago? I don't know.
Two Tuesdays, maybe.
Yeah.
But
I've
it's
been
very
here about
2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah. And I've been all over. I grew up in Plainfield, Illinois, a very podunk town. In Illinois, surrounded by corn and strip malls. And I was always a nature kid and I knew I wanted more. So I moved west. And I really got my start actually in conservation. So I worked at land trusts, advocacy nonprofits. One was fisheries. And that's where I got a lot of my communications sort of chops, was like writing press releases and putting out mailers and, you know, talking to people on the phone every day. And I got kind of sick of working for somebody else's mission and wanted to work for my own mission. And I figured journalism was the best way to do that. So last year, I got a master's degree in science journalism. It's a science communication degree from the University of California, Santa Cruz. And I just full bore switched into journalism. I had done journalism in the past. I was a student news editor in college, and I was the editor of my like high school paper, but, you know, nothing like big and serious quite yet. I got my start in, you know, volunteering at a local radio station in Portland. And then during the program, I interned at KQED and was on their science desk covering climate and environment. And then I was in DC for 6 months covering climate science for Nature magazine, and really just wanted to go back to radio. I really love radio so much because you can connect with like people in your community. It's, you know, you don't send something out and then it's crickets. You send something out and people respond, you know, people are listening and they pay attention. And the reporting you do actually does make a difference in a small community. So this is where I found my home.
Absolutely. And so you cover climate and environment, which it feels like there's almost no better place than Alaska for that.
That's right. And that's kind of what I was hearing down, you know, down south. And I'll just echo what Jamie said, too. Like when I was like, I want to do radio. My editor at the time in KQED was like, you should go to Alaska. And I was like, that's perfect because I've always wanted to live there. You know, my favorite animal's a moose. I always grew up dreaming of like the Arctic, you know, reading all of those books about Arctic exploration and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I knew I'd be into it. And here I am into it.
So you've been here a whole 2 weeks. How does it feel so far?
Excellent.
That's excellent. Okay, that's good. And I love that you were telling us a little bit about why you switched into journalism. Jamie, were you always wanting to be a journalist, or when did that start for you?
So I like to say I got bullied into being a journalist. with all the love in my heart. I actually went to school to study music performance and anthropology, and I had no idea what I was going to do. And my cousin, who also went to U of O with me, was just like, hey, you should join the student newspaper. And I always wanted to get into podcasting. When I was in high school, my life's dream was to become a lawyer at some point, burn out, and then start a food truck where I drive around the country with a tiny house attached to it that's also a podcast studio, and drive around the country interviewing other food truck owners. And so I was just like, okay, I guess I'll like learn how to make podcasts or whatever. And then the COVID-19 pandemic happened, and I was just like, okay, I'm stuck in my room now with nothing to do. So I taught myself how to edit podcasts. I worked for the student newspaper. One thing led to another. I got connected to this program called NPR Next Generation Radio, which is a week-long training program to teach people how to create multimedia, digital, non-narrated stories. And after that, I just kind of went, oh boy, I can actually do something like this, and really fell in love with it then. But if it wasn't for my cousin to push me and encourage me to even like create a podcast and put myself out there, there's no way that I actually would have seen this as an option. But yeah, you know, you find one form of storytelling, and then it leads you to another. And one day you wake up and you're in Alaska working in public radio.
And you find yourself at KTO being the education reporter. And there's a lot of education stuff going on right now. So we're glad to have you.
I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah. Okay. A couple fun questions for y'all as we wrap up the interview. I'll start with you, Alex. Favorite story that you have published so far in your journalism career?
Oh my gosh, I really should have prepared an answer for that.
I like the on the spot kind of question.
I don't have favorites. That's a problem for me. And also, once I publish something, I almost never think about it ever again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'm thinking about the next story.
Oh, I see. Ambition.
Yeah, there's only so much room in one's brain, you know?
Okay, let me ask it this way. What's the story that you've done that has had the most impact?
It was actually one that I did when I was in college. For my college newspaper, and our cafeteria workers were going to go on strike. They were talking about going on strike and trying to get better wages. They were getting paid really poorly and getting no time off, and then they were losing a bunch of staff. And so, so there was it was just a really huge problem that nobody really knew about. And some of the staff members came to me, and I actually sat down with them and their union rep. And they told me about all the things that they were going to argue for in their next, their next negotiation meeting. And then they said that it was open to students.
Mm.
It was open to anybody. Anyone could show up to the negotiation meeting. And so once I published that story, including that information, students flooded that meeting. And I think seeing that the students actually cared about what happened to their cafeteria workers, it pushed them over the edge, and they ended up getting a lot of what they asked for.
So, oh, wow.
So I think that was probably my most impactful story.
Okay. And Jamie, your favorite and or most impactful story?
To keep things light, back when I was over in Homer, there's this community across the bay from Homer called Seldovia. And in the summer, they've taken to putting on a concert called Songs on the Slough, where they'll get a band to play on a floating platform in the slough by Seldovia. And everybody in town just gets out on the water on paddleboards and kayaks and little skiffs and boats, and people are grilling things, and there's just music playing throughout the water, and you can just float and enjoy the music and just be in community of, you know, Seldovia has a year-round population of about 300-400 people. And in the summer, there's that community. There are folks who are visiting Seldovia. There are people who spend their summer out there, and everybody is just out together enjoying music. And so I was able to go there, go out on the water, and just it was a lot of fun to be able to connect with a community that I don't often get to visit for my job, and to also just like capture this small slice of a tight-knit community together. And that was just, it was so much fun to be on the water with everybody and to enjoy some really rockin' music.
Okay. If you both had some advice to give to a young person who might be listening to this and saying, hey, I want to be a climate reporter. I want to be an education reporter. What advice would you give them, Alex?
Never stop asking questions. As long as you're curious, you can do this work. Just stay curious.
Okay, Jamie.
That's a really good question. I would say, what would I say? I think I would say, you know, there are a lot of resources that are out there. And if you can't find something locally to support you, then there are plenty of ways to do it by yourself. I got my start, you know, watching YouTube tutorials on how to use Audition. And there are so many resources now that if you can't find something, you can make something of yourself still. And there are always ways to get in and connect to your local community public radio station. chances are there are opportunities there for you to engage with the community.
All right. And Jamie, give me one hobby that you have outside of work that you love to do besides the news.
I love playing my oboe when I have the chance.
Oboe when you have the chance. And Alex, what is one of your favorite hobbies outside of work?
I really like rock climbing.
Rock climbing. Well, you found a good place then, maybe here in Juneau, right?
It is quite wet most of the year, but I can climb indoors.
No, has anybody told you about the rock dump yet?
Yeah, I've been.
Okay, you already been. You're a member. Well, there you go. Okay. Okay, and last question for you, Alex. A favorite show, podcast, or book that you can recommend?
Well, I really think that if people haven't listened to Midnight Oil yet, which is a KTOO production, they really should. It is an excellent podcast. I really enjoy it. And another one I would recommend is Burn Wild. It's a podcast by Leah Sottile. She's a journalist that covers extremism. And it's about the radical environmental movement that sprang up in Eugene, Oregon to try to stop old growth logging. It's really fascinating.
Okay. Is there one that's entertaining?
These are entertaining.
No, I mean, in terms of like narrative storytelling, is the second one a narrative by chance?
Yeah. Burn Wild is more narrative.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. I would say the style is a little bit more welcoming. Maybe.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it's still journalistic, though. I mean, I don't really consume a lot of fiction.
That's what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say, what do you do outside of the journalism world?
Yeah, that's all I read. I only read nonfiction, basically.
Okay. Let's turn to Jamie. Jamie, you got a podcast, a show, or a book that you love?
Yeah. 20,000 Hertz is a podcast that has a very special place in my heart. I listened to a lot of it in high school and a lot of it during the pandemic. And it's one that just kind of digs into just like some weird specific sound. It could be the like ABC chime, or it could be Siri. There was one episode on 433, which is just a song that where nobody plays. And it was one of the most revelatory experiences to listen to that podcast, to have them perform 433, which is just 4.5 minutes of silence, and just kind of taking in the space. As far as narrative stuff goes, I am a big D&D nerd. And so I listened to The Adventure Zone as well during the pandemic. And that got me through a lot of really hard days of just like weaving in role play and tabletop gaming and storytelling all in just like one of the most beautiful stories that I've ever listened to.
The Adventure Zone. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, awesome. That's great. Well, thank you for those recommendations. Thank you for moving to Juneau, for being reporters here at KTOO. We look forward to hearing all of your stories. Alex Solomon is the climate and environment reporter. Jamie Deep is the education reporter. And you can follow all of their coverage at ktoo.org. I really appreciate you coming in today. Gunnar the Cheese for being here.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Of course. Okay. Up next, we will talk to the Juneau Audubon Society as we continue on with our day. You are listening to KTOO. This is Juneau Afternoon. But first, we have to listen to a little bit of Bird Note.
This is Bird Note.
So I get home, I make myself a cup of coffee, I enter my data. When I take a shower, when I close my eyes so the shampoo doesn't get in, I'm still seeing lines of ducks flying behind my eyes.
Allison Velog has worked for half a decade as a fall and spring water bird counter at remote migration hotspots around Lake Superior. For weeks, every day from sunrise to nearly sunset, Allison is outside in frigid and volatile weather, identifying species from afar and tallying them with a clicker.
You're just at the mercy of the elements and the wind. And it is exhausting to not only be out in brutal Lake Superior elements, but also paying attention all day and searching for movement.
Bad weather days are more reason for her to come in than to call out.
We're studying ducks and loons, birds that are associated with water, and rain and bad weather doesn't really make them stop flying. In fact, some of my most amazing flights have happened during some of the most miserable weather conditions.
Working close to the elements puts Allison face to face with the reality of dwindling bird populations.
I think as a society, we want to tune things out. Paying attention to the things happening around us at times feels almost like a form of protest. And that's really what keeps me doing it, is just having that lessened separation between my world and the world at large.
For BirdNote, I'm Josephine McRobbie.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. It is spring membership drive this week. You can support KTO by becoming a member with your donation today at ktoo.org. I am joined now by Brenda Wright from the Juno Audubon Society for our monthly check-in. Some cool events coming up that they have, especially a movie, a free screening of the animated feature Migration. Brenda, Gunathcheesh, hi.
Good to see you. Isn't it nice to have sun in your eyes?
It is nice to have sun in our eyes. It's nice to be on the air with you once again. So tell us a little bit before we talk about some other stuff about Migration, the movie, and how you got it to be playing at the Gold Town for a couple performances.
Yeah, the last couple of years, it's worked out really great because we're kicked out of the UAS, where we do most of our public lectures. And so we've been renting movies to show to the public that it's about birds. The last couple have been local ones written. One was made over in Gustavus, and another one was a worldwide interesting one about migration with real cameras, real people, real birds. But this is a great story about migration. Can you imagine a small family of mallards somewhere in New England meet these green-winged teals from Jamaica, and the kids go, "Can't we go too?"
Interesting. Yeah. And I know this movie came out a couple years ago. I think it was 2023.
Yes.
It was a big hit. And it's a full-length animated feature.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Lots of interesting adventures on the way to the South.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to know. Good for adults and kids,
yes,
right?
Because almost, yeah,
we'll probably both learn something.
Yes.
And so, wait, you were telling me, you said that you aren't at the UAS lecture hall anymore?
No, sorry. Just March. It's spring break time, and they have all kinds of different scheduled things during spring break. It just so happens we always coincide that way.
I see. I was like, you don't have a place out there anymore?
No,
that would
no.
be
they,
so...
They still allow us to have our public lectures there.
Okay. So most of the lectures are still there. But for now, for this month, usually in March, you've had to do a movie
right.
because of spring break. Okay. Now my little pea brain has gotten it.
Okay.
That makes sense. So the showings for Migration are tomorrow, March 13th at 6 p.m. And then again on Saturday, March 15th at 4 p.m. And those are at the Gold Town Theater downtown. It may be showing the other times, but these are the times that
yeah.
you are sponsoring and
yes.
the admission is free.
Right. Admission is free.
And it's part of the Juno Audubon Society offerings. It is rated PG. For those who need to know that, in case you want to know what age to bring for your children there. And tomorrow night it's at 6 p.m. and then Saturday, March 15th, it's at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, and it is open to the public. And of course, one of the best benefits about watching a movie at the Gold Town is hot popcorn with real butter.
Yes, the best popcorn.
That's the best, right? That's always so good. And those little cups that you can put the treats in.
Oh, yeah.
Those are so fun too. Okay, so, and this is the last lecture. No, there's one more lecture.
Yes, indeed, in April.
In April, because I know April, we're going to talk about the walk start too.
Yes,
but so
indeed.
there's two things that happen in April.
Yeah, there's
then. Okay.
A bunch of things kind of happening.
Okay.
In fact, we're actually combining with the backcountry hunters and fishers to help them learn more about eBird, where they could supply more information about the Mendenhall wetlands so that we all know better about what birds live where, because they're out there on different places than a lot of us birders go, birders.
And what is eBird?
Oh, sorry. eBird is an app that helps us put anything you see flying around into the computer to be used by citizen science.
And citizen science does what with the information?
Well, especially like this is attached to Cornell, but they use all of this information for hundreds of different studies, hundreds. Migration studies, nesting studies, population incline, decline, and just anything you can think of, because there aren't enough people doing science that are getting research money to get this kind of information. If you have 17,000 people going out on the Global Bird Day in Alaska, think of that instead of just like two scientists, one in Alaska, one in Fairbanks, and one in Juneau, trying to capture some data during migration time.
Right. So it's sort of like crowdfunded data gathering.
Yeah. It's really easy to use. You just put in it. It tells you your location, and all you have to do is look for at least 15 minutes. Try not to count on any of the birds twice if you're looking at your feeder. And just put in the species and numbers.
And that's eBird, which is an app you can get
free app.
On mm-hmm. your Apple phone or probably your Google phone or whatever it is.
And it's associated with Merlin, which is also a free app that helps you identify, you know, if you're not sure what you're identifying, you can like even just punch Robin and it'll give you some pictures and the migration route times it usually is where you are.
I see. Okay.
Lots of information. But that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
I saw my first robin yesterday.
Oh, awesome. That means spring is really here, right?
It is. And the other best thing is that I heard two juncos singing their spring song.
Oh, yeah. I remember talking about those for sure. That definitely means we are getting to a warmer climate. I can't wait. I can't wait for the sun and for the birds and for the warmth.
Yeah. So I'd love to see the juncos and the robin not be quite so puffed out because it's chilly.
Okay. And I know there's one more talk next month. We'll have you back for that. But then also, just to get people started to think about this, the Saturday walks are going to start picking up in April, right?
Right. And they'll go all the way through mid-June.
Okay.
Every Saturday.
And that is something that you can find out on the website.
Yes.
JunoAudubon.org.
Yes.
And that has the events tab, which will have all these things listed there, which is fantastic. But the thing to happen for this week, instead of a talk, is a lovely gathering to watch a little animated feature about migration. It's the movie called Migration, and it is rated PG. You can see it at the Goldtown Theater tomorrow night, Thursday, March 13th at 6 p.m., or on Saturday, March 15th at 4 p.m., Is there tickets in advance? Well, there's no tickets because it's free.
It's free. It's totally free.
So people just show up.
Just show up. And if you want lots of popcorn, come earlier.
Come earlier if you want double-sized popcorn. I love that. Okay. And of course, we can follow all the information for Juno Audubon at junoaudubon.org. Is there anything else that we want to mention today, Brenda?
No, I don't think so. But please, please do enjoy your birding experiences.
Birding experiences as spring comes. Download that eBird app, too.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for coming in, Brenda Gunnath-Cheese, for being here. And we'll see you next month.
Thank you. See you.
Appreciate it. And that will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, interviews with Reach, Tlingit and Haida, and Family Promise. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. You can support Juno Afternoon and other programming here at KTOO by becoming a member this week during our spring membership drive. Visit ktoo.org for more information. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49, Hanson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunnath-Cheese!